Well, if you would, please open your Bibles to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 is where we will begin our study in just a moment. It's good to see all of you here. Again, it's good to see all the visitors that are with us in our midst. It is good to be gathered to worship our God. In Philippians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul spends a considerable amount of time talking about the incarnation of Jesus. And here's how he speaks of it, beginning in verse 5. "Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped. He emptied himself, taking the form of a bond servant, and being made in the likeness of men, in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even to death on a cross." Jesus can be described and referred to in a number of ways based on what the scriptures say about him. Obviously, we've been studying Revelation, and there's a lot of descriptions that Jesus takes on in Revelation. He is the Lamb. He is the Son of Man. He is the rider on the white horse. He is often, though, in the New Testament, especially in the Gospel of Matthew, he is referred to as the Son of David that would sit on his throne. That fulfills a prophecy in 2 Samuel chapter 7, beginning in verse 14. And so in that light, we may think of Jesus as a king. And it would not be wrong to say that. But whenever we observe Jesus' personality, when he actually does come in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, his actions and the way he behaves is not really with respect to a king. It's more so with respect to a servant. And that's exactly why Paul has said what he has said in Philippians chapter 2. You see, Jesus did not come to be served, but he came to serve. He is the model servant. And the greatness of this is seen in the phrase, "He emptied himself, taking the form of a bond servant." For God to empty out part of his deity and to be less than what he actually should ever be is in and of itself one of the greatest acts of service we've ever seen in the Bible. He became like a man, and the Bible says he did not stop there, but he became submissive, like a servant would submit, not even to just doing work, but to being killed for no good reason at all, even death, and to death on a cross. I want to spend some time with you this morning talking about this idea of Jesus being the model servant, and how we can look at that example to be servants ourselves. And again, Jesus did not come to be a king in the way that we think of the word. Jesus himself stated on a number of occasions that he did not come to be served, but to serve. In Mark 10, chapter 45, when James and John are requesting that they be granted one at his right and one on his left when he comes into his kingdom, Jesus says, "You do not know what you're asking." And he goes on to say in verse 45, "For the Son of Man has not come to be served, but to himself serve others." And then he goes on to say, and the greatest demonstration of that is to offer himself a ransom for many. And no matter what part of the gospel you're in, with respect to a lot of Jesus's miracles and a lot of his ministry, his teachings, his healings, he was a humble servant who put every single person before himself. On one occasion in Matthew's gospel, when he had just learned of the death of his cousin, his brother, his faithful servant, John the Baptist, he withdraws from the multitudes that he's been teaching and healing. And the Bible tells us that he wanted to go to a secluded place to mourn his death, as should be the case with any kind of situation like that. But once he gets over there, the crowds learn about it and they follow him on foot. And when Jesus sees him, sees the crowds coming, he does not send them away. He does not rebuke them, but instead he serves them. And that's where we read of in Matthew chapter 14, he feeds the 5,000 because he felt compassion for them. Even in his grieving, he would put somebody else before him. Now, his greatest service was, of course, willingly dying on the cross. One of the things that I really appreciate about John's gospel especially is it tells us the attitude of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane when he is about to be arrested. In John chapter 18, beginning in verse 4, the Bible tells us, Jesus, knowing that all things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, "Who do you seek?" Of course, he knew who they were looking for, and they answered, "Jesus the Nazarene." And he said, "I am he." And Judas also was betraying him, was standing with them. So when he said, "I am he," they drew back and they fell to the ground. So the idea is they come to arrest Jesus. There's about 200 to 600 soldiers there, anywhere in that neighborhood. And Jesus looks at them in the eye and he says, "Here I am." They're not expecting that from Jesus. They're expecting some kind of a pushback, maybe even a war, hence the 200 to 600 soldiers that are accompanying Judas Iscariot and the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious leaders. But when he says, "I am he," there seems to be this almost astonishing reaction. And a second time, Jesus says in verse 7, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus the Nazarene." And he answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these go their way to fulfill the word of which he spoke. Of those whom you have given, I have lost not one." Simon Peter then, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. And the slave's name was Malchus. And so Jesus said to Peter, "Put the sword into its sheath. The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it?" That's the attitude Jesus always had. And it wasn't just when things were going right. It was always when things was going wrong as well. He said, "I am he, take me in." Even when he was about to be crucified and he knew the extent of that pain and that suffering, he willingly offered himself not only as the offering for his disciples there, but for the entire world, including those that would have arrested him. But to me, in the Gospel of John, there is another instance that perhaps, maybe, takes this idea of a servant even a little further. In John chapter 13, a passage I want to take you to now, in John chapter 13, this is one of the most crucial examples of service we ever read in the Bible. One that we ever read in the New Testament. And this is the night of the Lord's Supper. This is the night where they take the Passover. Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. And this is the last time that he will eat a meal with his beloved disciples. And the Bible tells us, beginning in verse 1, "Before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, and that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing all things were given into the Father's hand, and that he had come forth from God, and he was going back to God, he got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself." I want to stop there for a moment, and I want to talk a little bit about this idea of girding yourself. This phrase, "gird yourself," was a phrase that was commonly used to talk about the household servant. Whenever the household servant was called to do a particular duty, whether that was cleaning or serving people in terms of serving them their food or cooking the food or whatever the case was, they were often to gird themselves not only as a sign of what they were about to do, but a sign that they were in submission to others whom they were serving. So Jesus is stepping down from his role as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He is making a concerted effort to be lower than everybody else in that room. And how does he do that? In verse 5, "He poured water into the basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. He came to Simon Peter, and he said to him, 'Lord, "Do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I do you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter." And Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." And Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash your feet, you have no part with me." And Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, then not only wash my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "He who has bathed needs only to be washed his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, "Not all of you are clean." So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me a teacher and Lord, and you are right to do that. If I then, your Lord and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you that you, a slave, is not greater than a master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him." It's very hard for us, I think, to wrap our minds around what Jesus just did, because culturally, that's not something that happens very common, especially in this particular part of the world. What Jesus did, I would argue his disciples never forgot. In fact, I would make the statement it is the one thing that they probably remembered the most. When he was dying on the cross, after he rose from the dead, and when the very first sermon was preached on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. Jesus gets down and he goes around the room one by one, and he washes the feet of his disciples. But when he gets to Peter, he gets a way out almost. He gets the escape if he needs it. Peter says, "Lord, don't do that to me." And Peter realizes that this is not fitting for Jesus, because Jesus is rabbi. Jesus is master. Jesus is God. And as Peter himself has confessed previously, "You are the Christ, the Son of God," he recognizes that this is nothing for God to be able to be doing. I mean, this is not what God should be doing at all. But Jesus counters that and he says, "I understand that you do not know what I am doing. I get it, Peter. You can't wrap your mind around this, but you will understand it hereafter." And the hereafter, I believe, is referring to Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost, when they would serve themselves and be in the kingdom. But when Jesus says, "If I don't wash your feet, you have no part of me," Peter, he's like, "Okay, you can wash my feet, but also my entire body," right? He wants a whole shower. He wants the full works. And Jesus says, "No, I just need to do your feet." You know why? Because the feet was the most disgusting part of the body to be washed in that day and in that time. You know, they didn't have shoes like we did. It was all sandals. It was all open, you know, dust off your feet. You read those passages in the New Testament. And for Jesus to be stooping down, to be digging down into the mud, so to speak, to be with the scum, to be with the dirt. I mean, that's the God that Jesus is. And so Peter allows him to complete his job. But I want to tell you, Jesus didn't just wash 11 of those men's feet. He washed all 12 of them, which would have to include Judas Iscariot, the betrayer. The guy that was about to hand Jesus over to be crucified, Jesus washed his feet. Now, I would like to think that I would be able to do that if given the opportunity. I don't know. But we're called to do that. And after he had washed all their feet, he took his garments and he reclined back at the table. And he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you?" I can imagine in a state of shock and in a state of almost dead silence in that room. They didn't know what to say. But Jesus went on to explain to them. He says, I am your teacher. That's correct. I am your rabbi. I am your master. I am your Lord. And you are right to say that. And so because I have done the thing that no one else has ever done, believe you me, the same people we talked about last week, the scribes and the Pharisees, the hypocrites, they would have never lifted a finger to do these things. And the fact that Jesus, the Son of God, God Himself come in the flesh, that He would gird Himself to do this, can only mean that if we're in a position to do that, we better do it. Because we're less than He will ever, than we will ever be compared to Him. And that's why He says in verse 15, I gave you an example that you should do also as I did. We're not greater than our masters. We are simply slaves. And if Jesus could do this, how much more should we be doing is the idea. There is no greater example of service, probably next to the cross, than this passage we've just read. Jesus shows love in this passage, but He also shows what it means to be selfless. He shows what it means to be a humble servant. As Christians, we're called to serve rather than to be served. Many times we enjoy the moments where we get a moment of praise or pampering. That feels good, right? To have people serve you, to have people work. And usually that day is your birthday, maybe, when you're the person that all the attention is focused on you and kind of everything is made about you. And it feels good to be in that position. But I want to tell you sometimes, and not for everybody, but sometimes a temptation is it can make us feel entitled and privileged to something that we do not deserve. Because the truth of the matter is, what we deserve is death. That's what we deserve. Because Jesus took the consequence of our sin, death. And that's part of what He nailed to the cross, our consequence. So we don't have to deal with that anymore if we come to Him. We don't get to feel entitled. We don't get to feel privileged because that's not who we are. That's not why Jesus died for us. Times where we get praise and times where we are served, it may give us an inflated view of ourselves when we ought to be thinking about our neighbors, right? And that's Paul's point in Philippians chapter 2. Do nothing from selfish ambition. Do nothing out of your own interest, but do everything as you would do for others. Treat others the way you would want to be treated. Matthew 7:12. Look out for the interests of others. And being servants means that we forget, we try to forsake completely what's in it for us. That's not the question we should be asking, right? What's in it for me? The question is, how can I help somebody else? How can I be a servant for somebody else? And that's not to say that we cannot look after our health or our family and things of that nature. We should. But the priority must be others. Because if Jesus was not like that, where would we be? If He was only about Himself, where would we be? The Apostle Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 23, he lists several things that he's had to deal with in his lifetime. Among those are beatings and scourgings, famine, pain, and peril. He says, I've been in shipwrecks, I've been in turmoil, I've been on the run from robbers, I've been in dangers from my own countrymen, from the Gentiles, I've been in dangers in the city, in the wilderness, dangers among false brethren. Now that list is not an exhaustive list, I'm convinced it's not, because Paul must have dealt with so much. That was just kind of the basis, that just a little glimpse of what he had gone through. He said, I've been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Now, somebody in that state, what do you think they're going to say? Woe is me, right? Woe is me. Why am I going through all of these things? Why? I'm being faithful. I'm keeping the faith. I'm doing everything right. And God, you're going to allow all these things to happen? No, that's not what Paul said. Look at what Paul said in verse 28. Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. Paul said, I'm more concerned about them than I am myself. And if there was ever a guy that you could say, you know what, you deserve some time to yourself, it would be Paul. But even then he said, no, I'm not concerned about myself. It will be about my brethren. And that's the attitude we need to have. If there was ever a word to sum up Jesus' entire life, it would be service. If there was ever one word to sum up the goal of Christianity, it would be service. I would go as far as saying the meaning of all life is best displayed in service. That is the moment when we can look into this world and say, there is God. That's why he created. That's why we're here. And that's why we want to be with him, because of service. And the truth is, if we're not willing to serve as Jesus did, then we're not ready to be Christians. We're not ready to be called children of God if we're not ready to serve. So the question is, if we want to be Christians, are we ready to serve? And this is why Jesus said what he did in Luke chapter 9, beginning in verse 23. He who does not deny himself, if any man wishes to come after me, what is he going to do? He's got to deny self. It can't be about me. It can't be about what's in it for me. It has to be the other person. I need to say no to me and yes to everybody else. And when I do that, and when I'm willing to do that, then Jesus says, I will confess his name before my Father who is in heaven. That's what Christianity is. And that's the kind of Christians we all need to be. We must ultimately always look to put others before ourselves. And again, that does not mean that we cannot look out for our own interests, but it does mean that we must not lift ourselves up and inflate our mentality of ourselves. May we serve like Jesus and Paul. May God mold us in his image and make us humble servants who seek to love, sacrifice, and forgive. There's a song in the hymn supplement books, Make Me a Servant. For Jesus was a servant, make me like him. Do what you must do, God, to make me like him. And the reality of the situation is that takes sacrifice. That takes some giving up of things. That takes patience. That takes love. But if heaven is really what we say it is, if heaven is really where I want to be, service is what it takes. I want to encourage all of us and all of us together. May we look out for the interest of others the same way we look out for ourselves. May we hang everything on the two greatest commandments, as Jesus would say. Love God first and foremost, and then love your neighbor as you love yourself. And if we're ever behind in our service, I think it would do good for us to read John 13 and then John 18. Where Jesus not only washed the feet of his disciples, but he also offered himself on the cross for our sin and the sin of this world. If you're here this morning, we want to serve you and we want to help you to be a Christian. We want you to understand that this is not a change that's going to happen overnight. This is not something that in the snap of a finger, everything is better. Christianity is about work, and service is about effort and work. And we are willing to help if you are willing to come while we stand and while we sing.